Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Eli Gautier from Italy's Cantina Giuliana. Good evening, Eli.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much, Chaim. So my name is Eli. I have a winery in Tuscany that I opened with my wife, Laura, 3 years ago. The winery is called Cantina Giuliano, and we are located between Florence and Pisa, in the very heart of Tuscany. I am French, and I studied winemaking in France. Before that, I was living in London, where I was doing a bit in selling wine, but I really got into winemaking in France. It's where I learned winemaking. It's where I worked in wineries. And my wife, Laura, on the other hand, is from Italy. She's from the small village in Tuscany. And her family, for generations, have been making wine over there. Now, a few years ago, when Laura was very, very young, her grandfather passed away. And when he passed away, the family didn't manage to hold up and continue with the winemaking and the winery and everything. And the whole business kind of, you know, they sold the whole business and everything. So when I was learning winemaking, I was seeing that there was a big lack of good kosher wines coming out of Italy. And I also saw that a lot of people were getting a bit tired of very industrial products, whether it's in food or in wine or whatever it is. The industrial side of things is very something that people are tired of. They want something more natural, something more genuine, authentic. And so I thought, you know, I have my in-laws at this abandoned garage in the village. I thought, let me try and do something authentic in Tuscany, and I'll bring my knowledge of winemaking. My in-laws will help me with the contacts in the countryside, and I'll start something. So I fixed up for 6 months myself, you know, just buying cement and fixing the place. So I fixed the whole garage. I got vats, I got pumps. And Bo Hashem, things went well the first year. So next door was a whole abandoned really building, which used to be a winery and a olive press from 1788. You still have the date above the old olive press in what now is the restaurant. So, same thing. I spent 6 months with a trowel and a bucket and a shovel, and I fixed the whole place. And 6 months later, you know, it was just before harvest, we finished the building. You know, there was not even electricity, there was no water, there was nothing in this place. So we set up a restaurant, been part of the winery, and the rest is just for winemaking. So really, the idea, once again, is to keep it small, quality, authentic, and to try and do something really different from what's on the kosher market, not in terms of very high prices or whatever, just doing something that's real, that there's somebody behind it who's trying to do something with a real taste, which is authentic and which is the taste that the non-Jews around Tuscany are drinking, really. And in the restaurant project that we're doing, it's the same idea. My wife makes the cheese herself. We go to the shepherd, we get the milk. She makes the cheese. She makes the pasta. She makes the ricotta, the cheese that we use to fill the pasta. The olive oil is from our fields. And everything we make, in the morning I go, I know I have 4 people, 5 people, 10 people coming. I go and pick the vegetables in the garden. And this is what we then use to do all the food, the pasta, the fish, whatever. We serve the cheese with jams. The jams come from fruits that from our orchards, where my wife makes all of that. So really, it's growing, and the whole idea, once again, is to keep it authentic, that when you're a tourist, you're traveling through Italy, you're eating crackers and tuna for a week, finally, you come to me, you can spend a day, the afternoon, we chat, I take you around the fields, we have a nice meal together, I make you try all the wines we make, beautiful wines, and you go home and you had a little bite of Tuscany. You had a little taste of the experience of something real. And this is what we're trying to do. But this is the restaurant. And what I do, big part of what we do is wine, of course, because we have the winery. So we started in 2014 with a red wine, which is Chianti. Chianti is just a big region inside Tuscany. It's not a grape variety or anything. It's really just the region. And inside of this region, you have a lot of little sub-divisions. We are close to Pisa, which is towards the coast, the Mediterranean coast. And our Chianti is made with 70% Sangiovese, which is by law, it has to have at least 70% Sangiovese grape to be called Chianti. And then we have a bit of Merlot and a bit of a local Tuscan grape, which is called Ciliegiolo, which we will only find in Tuscany. And this makes our blend, which is aged 9 months in barrel, and that was our very first one, 2014. It's a light wine. It's very aromatic. A lot of, you know, beautiful berry flavor, cherry on the nose. And then in the mouth and the palate, once again, you get that cherry, very, very ripe cherry fruit, like black cherries. And the wine is very smooth, easy drinking, light. But it's not one of those light wines which you drink and it's just water, end of it. You have a nice body to it and the flavor lasts. It's very aromatic. It's 13% alcohol. I use very little sulfite, so it doesn't hurt your head, doesn't give you a headache or anything. And often people who are not so used to drinking red wine drink more white wine. So they like this wine a lot because it drinks well, it's not aggressive, it's not, you know, we're in Italy, we're not in Israel, so it's not one of those heavy, big Israeli wines, which are beautiful, but this is a different style. So it's nice once in a while to change it around. And for the Seder, for the Arbacosot, a lot of people really enjoy it because you can drink it easily, it doesn't give you a headache, you don't get drunk, and, you know, it's not mevushal, and it's really enjoyable. Since then, we've moved on a bit our production, and we started doing a white wine from the grape Vermentino. So Vermentino is a grape variety that was never made in a kosher version. I decided to make it because going around, you know, just taking strolls along the coast with my wife or whatever along the beach, you can see that in all the little restaurants, all the little bars, this is what the local Italians drink with their fish or with their antipasti or whatever, aperitivo. They have a nice glass of Vermentino. It's nice, it's fresh, you know, refreshing, aromatic. And so I thought, you know, let me try and make it. You know, I'll see, you know, if I can sell it to the Jewish market, so I'm glad. And if people are not so sensitive, I'll sell it to the non-Jews. Because it's, you know, nowadays in Tuscany, that's the white wine that everybody's looking for and everybody's drinking. So I thought, let me try. So we did a little bit of wine, only 200 cases. And half of it I brought to New York. The other half is in Europe. And already in Europe, I don't have any more of. I have 10 cases left, which is for the restaurant. But that's it. Everything else is gone. And so the Vermentino comes from a vineyard which is very close to the sea, about 15 miles maybe. So you get a lot of that sea breeze. And the earth is really a lot of sand. So the wine has this not saltiness, but has a bit of minerality, of the salinity of the sea that you can really feel. It's very fresh, very refreshing. And on the nose, it's a lot of aromatics, you know, a bit of honey flavor, apricots, pineapple, this kind of, you know, like white fruit, a bit of peach sometimes. You know, slightly sweet on the nose. And on the mouth, it's dry, really dry, and really long tasting. It has a really nice long finish to it. These wines, the Chianti and the white wine, the Vermentino, they're on sale, for example, in a shop like Liquors Galore here, where I'm doing the interview today, for, you know, around $17, $18. So it's really, once again, we're not trying to do expensive wines, do something simple that people can afford once in a while, and enjoy and discover really the flavors of Tuscany. Then we also did, since this year, we just bottled it about a month and a half ago, a wine which you might be able to call a super Tuscan, but I refer to it more just as a higher end wine that I've tried to, where I've tried to put a lot of energy and efforts in making, which is the denomination, the name on it is EGT Costa Toscana. Costa Toscana means the Tuscan coast because that's where we are. So that's the name of the wine. Then we call it La Gioia, which is the joy, because after 15 months or 16 months, a year and a half basically of working on this thing, and you start with grapes, different grapes, you ferment it, you age it, you put it in barrels, you have this and that, and racking it and moving it around the winery and everything, you blend it. Finally, you get to the end, and you know, after 16 months or whatever, you bottle it. When you have your first cup, it's just an amazing feeling of joy because it's a really magical process that you went through, and the product is the wine is what really what we were looking for. So that wine is made with 65% Sangiovese from a very, very nice plot of land, which is very high up in the hills, facing the sea, with a really nice breeze all day long, a lot of sun, small production of grapes, really concentrate the flavor, and then some Cabernet Sauvignon and some Merlot, also from really good vineyards in that area. All the vineyards are about half an hour, 45 minutes from my vineyard, nothing from my winery, nothing farther than that. I try to really work locally every year with the same plots, every year with the same producer of the grapes. We have nice relationship together to really bring out the best of my particular area. And so this wine on the nose has this really nice kind of fruity, jammy cherries once again, and a bit of what I call, you know, old world kind of funkiness to it. It's like a bit of leather, this kind of, you know, like farmhouse kind of things, you know, in the good sense. And on the palate, it's very smooth at first, and nice and fruity. And the finish is really long. The tannins, which means the tannins are what kind of feel like sometimes astringent, kind of coat your mouth, or nice and long, meaning the wine is going to age very well. You know, you can probably sell this for 5-7 years and it'll grow really nicely. And this wine here, once again, in Liqueurs Galore, is retailing around $25, I think. And this is the price more or less all over New York and New Jersey. So that's our three wines. We work with Raaf Wolf of Amsterdam, who might not be so well known to Americans, but in Europe he's one of the most important rabbis in Kashrut. He works all over Europe, does very, 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 very serious person, and with the OU. So they come regularly to the winery and everything. Now, the winery being 100% kosher, easier to really have a very high standard of Kashrut, because the winery is mine, I'm from, nobody has the keys except for me, of course my wife, and so there's nobody ever going in, you know, and I do everything myself, I don't have any workers, so it's, you know, it's impossible basically for a non-Jew to ever come close to the vats, to anything, meaning the level of Kashrut, we really try and keep it as high as possible. The wine is not mevushal, and which means it's great for kiddush, you know, it's for all opinions and for the arba kosot, and this is what we try to do.
Now, let me ask you a few questions. The wines, I understand, are going to be in the range of between one and what?
In terms of price, the wines are, I think the Chianti you can find usually between $16-$17 and $20. And so is the white wine, the same price. And the reserve wine, the bit higher end wine that we make, is La Gioia, is going to cost between, once again, depends on the stores and the places, around between $22 and $28, maybe $23, $28. That's the general range.
Okay, aside from the fact that you make Italian wines, that you're introducing the American kosher palate to classic Italian wines, what exactly made you make the wines in the lower price category as opposed to some of the more expensive ones? And how do you choose the type of grape that you want to feature in your wines?
The fact that I managed to keep the price is reasonable is for, one of them is because I wanted to, and the other is because that's also how I built my winery. I see a lot of people, you know, who maybe they don't have money every Shabbos to spend $30 or $50 on a bottle of wine, and maybe people who want to drink wine more regularly during the week, once in a while with friends or with their wives, they want to have a cup of wine. And, you know, and if you want to drink something nice, you're going to say, oh, I have to spend $15, $20, whatever it might be, and even in that range, it's not so easy. So my idea was to try and make it approachable for people to discover new wines at a good price, because a lot of, you know, a lot of boutique wineries have very, very high prices, and their wines are obviously very, very good, but it makes it difficult for, you know, normal regular people to enjoy them. So that was really just like a kind of ideological thought, that I wanted people to be able to discover things, because you know, I don't have the means of buying expensive bottles every day or every Shabbos or whatever, and I want to discover new things, so I'm thinking I'm not so different from everyone else, and I'm sure everyone has the same kind of desire. So that's one aspect. And the other aspect is, because I built the winery myself, I don't have any workers, I had to buy this ruined building, but the price was reasonable because it was in ruin, so I had to work very, very, very hard to fix it. It was long hours, very tiring, but Baruch Hashem, I managed to finish it up. And so there's no intermediary between, very few intermediary between me, the producer, and you, the final client. Meaning, you know, usually what happens in kosher winemaking in Europe, somebody will go to a big winery or a big chateau or whatever it might be, and they'll say, okay, I want to make a couple of vats of kosher wine. So you have to bring the mashgichim, they have to kosher everything, you have to have the mashgichim there all the time. For every single little tiny operation, mashgich needs to come. You know, and usually in the countryside, in the south of France or the middle of Italy, there's no Jews. If you bring them in every time, it costs a lot of money. So to do this, to make it worthwhile, so they make a lot of wine. So they go to the very big producers, making very, very big quantities of, you know, more industrial wines. Doesn't mean they're not good wines. It just different style of wine. It's a different relationship, you know, that I have with the wine. So the fact that it's mine makes it very, like, much simpler to keep prices low. In Europe, for example, I almost only sell directly to people. You know, all over Europe, I either ship them or I travel around, do tasting here, tasting there, tell my story, have people discover that it exists, you know, from winery in Italy. Because the original project, really, I didn't mention before, was that I should be able to make one 6 months. And 6 months, I should be able to learn in a Beis Midrash, in a little koilel, where in Strasbourg, where we live, in France. So of course that was very nice idea. It was very hard. So the first 2 years, Baruch Hashem, I managed. This year it's getting harder because I'm traveling around a lot. But you know, when I'm in Strasbourg, at least half the day I managed to learn. And for me, it's very important to not lose that part of life. You know, not just running after money or whatever. I also just want to be able to grow and to, you know, be a better person. So that for me was a very important aspect of the project, and so keeping it small is also a way for me to do that. Now the question, Chaim's question about the grape varieties and how I choose them and everything. So in Tuscany, the main grape variety is Sangiovese. That's the grape variety you're gonna find almost 80% of the field are gonna be Sangiovese. Very simply because, I guess, with time, you know, thousands or hundreds of years, people have seen that this is the grape that grows best in this particular region. And every part of Tuscany is going to have a different kind of maybe a Sangiovese, a tiny bit different here, different there. The earth is going to be different here, different there. So the wines are going to be very different from one place to the next. It's like, for maybe some of you who are familiar with Burgundy in France, Bourgogne, there it's all Pinot Noir. Everywhere you're going to go is Pinot Noir, and all the whites are going to be Chardonnay. There's nothing else. But you're going to have hundreds of different types of tastes and of wines and of styles and everything. Why? Because wine is not just about the grape variety. It's a lot about where it grows, if not mostly the terroir. Exactly. So the terroir has a massive impact. And if you grow a Cabernet Sauvignon in Tuscany, and then you grow the same Cabernet Sauvignon in Canada, and the same in South Africa, you're going to have three completely different wines that probably you wouldn't even recognize as being the same grape. So reading the grape variety on a label helps to understand the kind of wine, but it's not always the best way to really understand what the wine will be, because the place where it grows has a massive impact. So to come back, so I took Sangiovese as the main grape in my reds, because it's a local grape variety, and I wanted to work with locally, like, historical varieties. So the first Chianti we did, there's a bit of Merlot. The second year, I didn't use any more Merlot. I used another grape variety from Tuscany called Canaiolo, which you only find in Tuscany. And then for my bit higher-end, super Tuscan wine, so I did a bit of Cabernet, a bit of Merlot. Why those two grapes? Because they're both grapes which are very pleasing because they bring a lot of softness and roundness to the wines. And Sangiovese can be a bit of a tougher wine, and usually it requires the wine to age for a long time before it softens and it's nice. So that's why by adding those different grape varieties, you balance it. And same in the end with the Chianti, the other grapes I'm using, why am I using those and why in this percentage? Because I know that I need a backbone of Sangiovese for the traditional, you know, strong cherry flavor, a bit of acidity, freshness, body. But I want it to be round, I want it to smell very good, have a lot of fruity aromas, and so the Chile Giallo and the Canaiolo grapes are two grapes that do that for me. And this is how you choose. But often people ask me, how do you choose the percentage? How do you? So it's a bit of a, you know, educated guess. So I'm going to say, okay, I know that more or less this is how it's done, so let me try. The thing is, when I go and pick the grapes, because basically I have a plot of land which is for me, and I have a contract for that plot of land. Now, if that year there's less grapes or more grapes, I'm going to pay the same price. So for me, it's important to usually to reduce the quantity of grapes to have more concentrated wine and not have something so watery and tasteless. But of course, I still want to make it economically viable, feasible. So I need to, you know, I need to find that balance. The thing is, depending on the year, and the year has a tremendous impact on the wines. So one year, for whatever reason, so it was a very good spring, or it rained a lot, or didn't rain, or whatever it might be, there's more grapes. So I go and I want this plot of land, and all of a sudden, instead of that plot of land representing 15% of my Chianti, now it's going to be 20. So, okay, it's not a massive deal. It's not a life changer. Now, if it's from 15 to 40, obviously, there's a problem. But, so, you know, maybe this year's 15, next year's going to be 18, last year's going to... And this will change every year. But the general style will still be the same. This is what you go for. And the Chianti will change from one year to the next. The flavor will be a bit different, a bit more body, a bit less, a bit more alcohol, or a bit less, whatever. But the general style of the wine and the general experience is the same. Why? Because the land that it grows on is the same, and the terroir, the area is the same, and this has a huge impact on the final wine.
Let me ask you one question. Why winemaking obviously is based upon some scientific principles. The fact is that the final product is more the product of art than of science, because there are so many different variables in the making of a wine. How do you decide from year to year which variation to use and so on?
So this is where emuna or faith comes into play, because if I was making a million bottles, you know, and sourcing grapes all over the region, so I could probably just make the same wine every single year, because then it's just science, because I can just play around with it and add whatever I want, and, you know, in one way or another, I'll manage to keep a standard product. It's what a lot of big wineries want to do, because they want that every year you go and buy their wine, and you're having the same wine, and so you're not disappointed or whatever, and you know that. So, I mean, it's completely understandable. You want to know what you're going to get, and what you're going to pour to your guests or bring to your friends. So, in my case, at the end of the day, it's a lot about just, I try to have the grapes be the most beautiful and the most perfect in the vineyard as possible. And when I bring them in, I try to get the most I can out of them in terms of quality and flavor. And that's it. So, but there's very little, I have very little control. I just kind of try and follow what Hashem is sending me that particular year, if it's more sunny or less sunny. And actually, you know, we're going to release the 2015 Chianti in the future month, and if some of you have the chance to try those side by side, and I've done that a lot with you know, with clients or with tourists who come to the winery, and it's an amazing experience, because you really discover the different styles. Both wines are really good, but it's just very different. In you know, they have a lot of similarities. You recognize it's the same kind of wines, but there's so much, you know, changing just because of the weather. And that's really something that's outside of my hands because of the size of the winery. But I like that, because I think that variation is also, that's also how people will learn that wine is such a natural product. You know, you're not buying a can of corn or a bottle of Coca-Cola in the store. You're buying something that's still alive, and that's why if you leave it in your cellar, in your garage or basement or whatever it might be, for 5 years, you'll see how much it'll evolve, because it's alive. It's a very amazing product. It's very similar, let's say, to cheese made with raw milk, or to bread. When you look at it, there's things that they're organisms living in it that make it grow, that make it change, that make it evolve, and that's the beauty of it. You know, in the end, it's not for nothing that wine is such a particular beverage, and that, you know, it's such an important beverage in the Jewish, in Judaism, in Jewish tradition, because it's so special. And it's really, I'm just trying to do the best with what nature gives me, but I think it's what we do in in life in general is what we try to do.
Let me ask you what is going to be an unfair question. Thought you were going to get away easy. You're not. How does your Chianti compare with some of the other kosher Chiantis coming out of that area?
So, I haven't tried every other kosher Chianti. I've tried a few. So, I think that in the market today, I think you've got two kinds of Chiantis. You have kind of the very entry level ones, very, you know, like cheaper price points, maybe $10, $11, $12 or whatever. So those ones often resemble the kind of, you know, big production of wines you're gonna find throughout Italy. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, listen, they're gonna be. Some people are going to like them, it's going to be the palate of some, but I feel like calling it Chianti, the problem is that then people associate Chianti with a wine that's very industrial and very entry-level, when it doesn't have to be. So you can do like this, you can do like that. Everything is possible, but so I think they can be very enjoyable wines, but I feel like somehow the consumer is missing out on the experience of something much more interesting for only a few dollars more. So then in the price range of my Chianti, you've got other beautiful Chiantis. You know, you have some that are like the Borgo Real Chianti, for example. The Reserve is really nice, or the normal one is very nice. The, you know, it's going to be ripe, very ripe, but it's going to be more, I think, similar to some of the, you know, some maybe not Israeli wines, but kind of that style of very fruity, very fruit-forward, important wine. So people like that. Our Chianti is more Italian in style, meaning we're trying to get to what the non-Jewish market is doing, because I think that's what Chianti was. Now, the fact that you can make Chianti in many ways, I think, is great, because everybody can have their own, can find their own bottle. But in our case, we're trying to do something that's a bit more refined and aromatic. You know, elegant is often the word I use. And maybe this is me being a bit romantic, but I think that often the wines resemble the people of the place. And if you look at Italians, if you go to Italy, they're very elegant. You know, they're not American girls in California. And they have this elegance and this, but at the same time, this warmth and this, you know, this nobility of character, which is very particular to Italy. And in Tuscany in particular, somebody goes to Florence, walks around, talks to people, you'll see how warm people are, but also how refined, how elegant in the way they dress, in the way they speak. And I think this shows through the wines of the place. And if you go to Bordeaux or to France, you can see the style of the people, you can see the styles of the wines. Often it's actually very similar. And if you go to Israel, where people have maybe a more straightforward and have a stronger character, so you can see that the wines they make are straightforward and have strong character and very bold and big, you know, and we love that. So that's what we're trying to do with our Chianti.
When I first learned about wines, I learned right away that if I drink a wine and I try to guess what it should be selling for, if I guess higher, obviously it's a very good value for its price. If I sell lower, it's obviously not worth the price. We shall taste your wines in a minute, since I'm continuing with my unfair strain of questions. Now, let me ask you, how many bottles do you produce per year?
So the first year, we made 12,000 bottles of the Chianti. The second year, now, we just bottled 18,000 bottles, so 10,000 of the Chianti, 2,500 of the white wine, the Vermentino, and 5,500 of the La Gioia, the Super Tuscan. Next year, Bezrat Hashem, should have maybe around 22,000 bottles, because I'm working on two higher-end Sangiovese and Cabernet Sauvignon wines, which are from very old vineyards in a very, very particular spot. The whole process was, I'm working very hard on doing something of quality there. And so that will take the total maybe around 22,000. And I think I would like to try and maintain that kind of production, because this is what I managed to do physically by myself, otherwise it's just already like this. It's quite physically demanding, and I would like to keep it around that also, because this is the quality. I know I can control that, and I know that I don't need to bring in anybody. So for kashrut, it's very, you know, I know what I'm doing, and I know that I can. I'm sure of what I'm offering my my clients and the people who come visit.
And we're almost out of time, and I just can't wait to taste those wines, especially the Vermentino. I never had a Vermentino before. Okay. The label is an interesting label. Who designed those labels?
So the labels were designed by actually a French girl in Strasbourg called Jelly Salatini. She's actually a young girl in a university when I first met her. Now she's, you know, done with university and everything. But obviously I'm the one who, you know, came up with the pictures which I found lying around in my in-laws' house, in the drawers, photo albums. I was just looking around and I saw these pictures and I thought, wow, they really tell a story. There's something, once again, authentic and genuine about these people. It's not, you can see they didn't really pose. They're just living, you know, and expressing something. And the fact that they're all pictures that are linked to my wife's family, for me, was very important. And the name of the winery, Cantina Giuliano. Giuliano is my wife's grandfather, who passed away, Alav Shalom. And we're trying to say that these wines tell a story. And when you I want that if you can't come to visit me at the winery, at least you can have a glass of my wine, and you'll taste a bit of that story.
Over the years since we've been doing this show, we've interviewed quite a few winemakers. Some of them were obviously quite in love with the idea of making wine. Some of them were just people who were doing it for a living. In your case, I can tell that it is a labor of love. And if it helps make a living, much better. Thank you very, very much for being with us. And now you leave me no choice. I have to visit the winery in Italy.
I really hope so.
Thank you, Eli. Good night, one and all, and tune us in again next week, right before Pesach. Thank you, and good night.